Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success, and welcome to another episode of my Police Promotion and Leadership Podcast, giving you CPD on the go, wherever you may be listening. This is another episode where I interview a former senior police officer who is happy to share experiences as they moved through their career, some of the things that were inspiring to them, how their careers have gone since, whether there's life after retirement, and lots of perspectives around preparing yourself for a promotion opportunity. So my guest on this podcast is Darren Lockley. He's a former temporary superintendent who will be sharing with you some insights from his career. And if you've got something interesting to say yourself on policing, promotion or leadership, get in touch to arrange an interview. I'm even happy to share my platform if you've got a story to tell, either by writing a guest blog post, which can be anonymous if you wish, or recording a verbal message to feature as a guest podcast. I'm always happy to share this platform to promote a diverse range of perspectives in policing whilst creating informative content for you. And my chat with Darren today covers quite a bit of ground for you, wherever you are on your promotion journey, wherever you are in terms of your career intervals, and whatever you're thinking about for your future, and including what it's like to start again in retirement and to enjoy and to still keep enjoying life and your career. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, and for info in a moment, I'll be giving a quick overview of the support that Rank Success offers aspiring cops, serving cops, and the benefits of becoming a podcast subscriber. And then we'll get straight into the episode. Let me know your views on the Q&A on the podcast notes. At Rank Success, I'm committed to giving you the best police leadership development, levelling the playing field of promotion, whatever your budget and wherever you are. I invite you to explore my free blogs at policepromotion.blog and videos on my YouTube channel. There's topical police news, salary information, deep dives into diversity, CVF explainers, explanations of promotion assessments, and various aspects covering your police leadership and ongoing CPD. All this content will firstly help you become a better police leader, and then secondly, succeed in your promotion process. To go further, you might consider becoming a subscriber of my podcast. Not only will you be supporting the free content I create for others, but for just $4.99 a month, you'll also get extra subscriber-only episodes. You'll be the first to access all new episodes and have access to the best of my back catalogue, whilst also getting an exclusive 25% discount on my market-leading promotion materials. There's no commitment, and you can cancel any time. Want to smash your promotion with tried and tested prep? If you've got an upcoming board or you just want to get ahead of the competition now, consider my structured, succinct and rank-specific toolkits. These help focus your effort on the right things, including examples of what good evidence looks like, explainers of the CVF, plus a myriad of other essential content to help you achieve your aspiration. Others have described these materials as a godsend, like gold dust, helping to tame the monsters in your mind, and have even stated there's nothing else like it. See countless more testimonials on my website from successful cops who took action and got in touch. There's e-guides, my professional recorded masterclass video, plus my in-depth CVF explainer video, or indeed special bundle offers on everything. Or come join me for an all-inclusive day on my next in-person promotion masterclass. All this and more is available from my main website at ranksuccess.co.uk, and the return on investment will come in your first month's salary increase alone. So that's an overview of what I can do for you, and without further ado, let's get into today's podcast. Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success, and welcome to another Rank Success podcast. And my guest today is Darren Lockley, a former temporary superintendent in the police. And we're going to be covering a few issues around career development, CPD, and what it's like to prepare for a new challenge at some stage into your retirement. So good afternoon, Darren.
Yeah, hello, Steve.
Okay, Darren, just for listeners, I've got a couple of questions. I want to go through some of the topics I just alluded to, but You're an experienced police officer. You've been out of policing for a little while. You're about to go back into a new challenge, and we'll cover some of those things. But could you just give us a quick snapshot of your policing career so people are quite orientated with that?
Yeah, no, of course, yeah. I mean, I left home at 16, joined the police cadets in London, and had a great time there. Left London after about 15 years, came down to Devon and Cornwall. Came back as a funny enough as a sergeant in London, and then lost the rank for a week in Devon and Cornwall, and then got my rank back after a week, which was interesting. And then enjoyed my time in Devon and Cornwall and progressed through. Probably the last sort of 10-12 years was as a senior manager, and that was probably three different areas. One was running a department, and that was all different types of department. One was that spontaneous type stuff, but also as an SIO, but dealing with tactical firearms commands, Ripper authorizations, things like that. And the third bit for me, was, which was really important, was about my own CPD. So I developed a lot in the last sort of particularly 10 years about how I saw development and what was the benefits for me as a senior manager. And then I've been out for probably 10 years now, and I'm looking to go back into the workplace in a very similar environment to what I left.
And I think that's the interesting point, I think, for some listeners is, A, why you'd want to do that, but B, the CPD journey that it represents and the example yourself. So some of these podcasts I do with serving officers who are kind enough to give up their time, serving senior officers, and to try and get a mix and a balance around that. Also people who have had successful policing careers. And so you mentioned, Darren, when you joined as a cadet. What, 17, was it? 16?
16, yeah.
16 at that time, right. And where did you leave from?
Originally, I'm from a little village in Yorkshire. Went down to the smoke in London as a 16-year-old. I look back now and think I was so young. I can't imagine any of my kids going at 16 to live in London and stay in a police college. But then joined 18 and a half, which again is frightfully young to be on the streets of London. But when you're young, you think you know everything anyway, so... joined there, and then took promotion really early, probably because I was steered towards it, probably because my sergeant at the time told me that there's no way on earth that I'd ever make a sergeant, sort of inspired me a little bit, and did that. So I did enjoy that.
And what was the process like that? We are talking outside life on Mars, aren't we? We are in that territory. We're just outside life.
We don't want to talk about too much about how long ago this was, but this is a time when... we did our own prosecutions at court. There was no CPS. There was no typical interviews. There was no PACE.
Yeah.
So those are the periods before that, which we can remember.
Yeah.
And then it was actually all those things being introduced. So that's sort of where we were. When I did the promotion, it was really, you do an exam. It was in a big hall. You did an exam. You passed the exam. And then you waited for a sergeant's course, which was 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. And then you were a sergeant.
And that was it?
That was it, yeah.
So that was the national sergeant's exam?
That was the Met, because the Met were always different, I guess, to everywhere else. But that was definitely the Met. Obviously, we had the largest turnover, 30,000 cops. So big old place, a lot of transition a lot of the time.
And you were at some stage, I believe, the youngest sergeant in the Met at one time, is that right?
Yes. And then I probably was the longest serving, because I stayed as a sergeant for, must have been nearly 15 years. No, probably about 13 years as a sergeant, something along those lines eventually. Mm-hmm. So I was there for a long time as a sergeant, and that's probably because I got promoted so young. Almost felt as though I needed to make up some time in the experience department as opposed to progressing. Plus the fact I was having a great time. It is a great rank. And so
you enjoyed it at that rank?
Yeah.
And on reflection, in terms of experience, were you happy with that, looking back, that was a good period of time? That was, in terms of policing experience, it was the right move?
I think for me it was, I enjoyed it. I didn't really have a career plan.
Okay.
I guess I just had, sergeant sounded good. They all seemed to have a good time. And I was at a time when I was very much CID based.
So, I can hear my listeners listening now, a sergeant saying,
It was a great time, you know, and then to go through time as a sergeant, it just felt as though it was a great time. You're not quite in that bit where people don't talk to you as much. You're still part of the team as such, and you get involved, you work long hours. Generally speaking, I have a great time. So, no, that wasn't really a path. It was more drifted into it, enjoyed it, and stayed there.
Okay, so... then the move then to inspector, then what happened with that? What was going on then for you to choose to decide to go from sergeant to inspector, and what was the difference in your approach?
Do you know what? It was as simple as I got divorced.
Okay.
Because for anybody that's been through it, and maybe one or two police officers in that field.
One or two, I'd imagine. Yeah.
So for me, I felt as though I could do the rank of inspector for quite some time. I felt as though you look at people come past you, I guess, in terms of rank structure and how they are as individuals. Think, well, I can do that job and everything else. But I still enjoy myself as a sergeant. But then ultimately, when you get divorced, you get something called a cash transfer value, which looks at the ranks. And I happen to notice how much more pension an inspector got than a sergeant. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a significant jump. And I was probably just over halfway through my service. I'd looked at it and went, well, actually, I need to be thinking more now about longer term, the future. Single parent, I had three children. It was more a case of I need to provide as well. Mm-hmm. So all the factors that had not been there for me so much was about looking at the future, was about providing for my family and thinking very clinically about that, really, rather than just thinking my heart and going, I love this job, I love doing this, I love doing that. It was taking myself to the side and going, well, I need to think a bit wider than that now.
So you had a plan then, a mindset, a difference in approach, a sense of purpose to get this?
Yes, definitely. Okay. And then I went into that organs blazing, really. That was the Osprey time. Mm. And I know things have chopped and changed as they've gone through, but it was, you know, you did an exam, you did the Osprey part two, and then you went for an interview as well. So it was those three different stages which I went through, and fortunately I was successful to get through that.
Okay, and then looking at your career development from then on, through as you moved from inspector through to chief inspector, you did quite a few things there, didn't you, around being inspector, being a DI. You were setting up a high-tech crime unit, the first one in a force.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
I was very lucky in some ways, or unlucky, depending on how you looked at it. But for me, the good thing is, the one thing that was I really lent on a lot, and it really hits home when you're in the position like as an inspector, a new inspector. If I've got a wealth of background and experience behind me in two different police forces as a supervisor, it's massive, because you're sat in a room talking to other people who may not have had that experience. So you lean on that quite a bit, and it gives you confidence in what you can achieve in the rank. So for me, I was a new DI, and taking on a high-tech crime unit, taking on a forced paedophile unit, things like that. That was all new business for policing. And then we had a national operation that hit, Operation Orr. We had 150 or so targets. It was more a case of, right, how on earth are we going to do this work? So it really forces you to get your head round. How are you going to manage all this from a strategic point of view? You're not the one there now delivering. You're there thinking about the strategy and then actually developing yourself for the next rank as well, because I quickly got involved at a regional level, national level, opens lots of eyes to what is available on a global sense as well, because obviously we were linked into America. I went to Interpol. It really was a really great process to go through. And in between times, we were relocating the high-tech crime unit. We were building a lab. We were going to a site off campus, if you like. Mm-hmm. And that was needs to be developed. So you need good people around you. You need to work with the states. You need to work with everything to do with finance. And all of a sudden, your experience goes from being like, I'm having fun as a cop, as a sergeant running around doing bits and pieces, which, to be fair, I was, and it was great. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, it just showed me where I was lacking in some of my skills, definitely. And I had to sort of really think long and hard about how do I develop.
So you started to develop some oversight, some strategic awareness, if you like, by working at a broader level with different people from different organisations and at different levels to get the job done on the operations you were doing. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. And I think the thing that hit home for me was it wasn't enough to be a good cop. You know, it's great to have a background and have the experience, but when you're working with budgets, long-term planning, estate, and you're looking at all these different areas that you've not really touched on before. And it's not part of your training. You don't get that as a cop going through. It's all about policing. Mm-hmm. And when you're a manager, it's not just about policing. It's about business skills. Mm-hmm. And that is so important. And that became, for me, massive. in terms of my own development. I really focused on that a lot as it went through, certainly in the last 10 years of my service. You know, I went back to university, I joined the Child Management Institute because I felt as though I really needed to hone in the business skills. Yeah, and then that, to me, has been...
You took that into a master's degree, didn't you? You started doing a master's degree. To exploit that, to maximise your potential of development in the role you were in, doing the operations you were doing, or was it something that you just felt a sense of purpose to do?
I think that probably two. I think the first thing, you know, you leave, I left school with a few O-levels and had a great time, very much in the sport, and enjoyed that side of things. So academically, I want to prove myself that I could do that. You know, you pass exams internally, but there's nothing you can compare it to outside in the academic world. You can't move across and say, well, this is worth that. You know, I'm a tactical firearms commander, that's worth this in the outside world or whatever. So, and also it doesn't relate to business. And for me, I wanted something where I could test myself academically. So where am I? Where am I academically? What would be of use? And of course, you're thinking long-term as well, thinking, well, actually, what am I going to take out of the police? So to develop myself internally, to give me better skill set, to make me a better manager in the police, to benefit the police, would hopefully then benefit me outside as well.
And you worked very much, didn't you, in relation to developing inspectors at a certain point in their career and identifying the gaps in their skill sets. How did that come about as part of your work on your master's?
Well, I think for me, like I say, I really honed in on it. And I think if somebody had looked back at me, if I was a new inspector, I'd want to be saying, well, actually, it's not just about being a cop anymore. You've got to start thinking, right, we've got all this change that's happening. You know, 10 years ago, we were under financial pressure and we were up to reorganisation and blueprints and everything else. And to be honest, it doesn't seem to have changed much. There's always going to be financial pressure. There's always going to be a need to restructure or to optimise our resources in a far more efficient way than we're doing. So that's always going to be there. And I think for managers now, I think that's so important. So for me as a new inspector, I'd want somebody to be taking me under my wing and going, right, that's what we need now. And of course, that could all be in place now, but at the time, as a new inspector, there wasn't masses available. We had the National Police Improvement Agency had a senior leadership development program, which I quickly went on to, which was for chief inspectors and above. And that opened the door to me, to the Chartered Management Institute, towards strategic planning, and then that was a pathway into doing the MBA as well. So all those things really helped me. But as an inspector, that wasn't available. So I felt I needed to do something for my inspectors locally. So I did some work with them around, right, what do people know? And clearly there were gaps between finance management, business management, business change management, all the things to consider around there. So I was utilising some of the stuff that I'd learned on my journey, if you like, identified a gap, and then we could liaise with the Child Management Institute to try and do something locally to get the managers upskilled. And that was really passionate for me, because then that opened up, well, actually, what are we doing for middle managers? What are we doing for inspectors? So my dissertation was on middle management development, and that was not just police officers, that was police staff as well. And that was a really interesting, you know, you could talk for hours about the findings in that and the work that went into it. But it was a really great journey for me as well, about myself and about what it meant to me and my values going forward and things like that. So it was good.
Okay. And then obviously from there, there's the next step through to get your third PIP. What was that process? When did that come?
That came fairly quickly. In fact, all my promotions sort of came fairly quickly. You sort of do loads of work at one rank and then all of a sudden leapfrog, it seems, a way through. But the next bit was chief inspector. That process from memory was an assessment centre. So a recommendation application assessment centre and then interview as part of that. I did really well. Really, I think I had so much evidence for it and I was really keen on it. So it was something that I really put everything into. And it was a big lesson for me there, because subsequently I've done things that I haven't put that amount of effort into, and it's gone horribly wrong. So, but that one, I was really proud of what I'd done to get through the process. Scored really highly, got really good feedback on it as well. And that for me was testament to, like, my wider development, not just about being a cop. It was about the business side of it as well.
Yeah. Okay. And then you you had a posting as head of special branch. Is that right?
Yeah, no, so in between times, it's funny because right at the start you said, temporary superintendent, and so that's a really interesting point because actually I was DCI, that was my core rank. I was fortunate to get temporary promoted, and I was a temporary superintendent for about, I think in total, about 5 years, something along those lines, which is great for your pension, but doesn't really help you when it comes back and you go, well, actually, why didn't I actually ever make substantive superintendent? So I've come to peace, get to peace with that myself.
Well, we talked about that, really. So you got the pension from it that came out of you. You got the work and doing the work. So, but that thing around temporary superintendent is something that's still of interest to people today, because there are people that I certainly speak to that are temporary sergeant, temporary inspector and temporary chief inspectors for long periods of time. Mm. Then they lose that temporary and then they get it back again. So in one way, they're doing the job. They're trusted to do the job. They're doing it, whether that involves on-call, management, mitigation of risk, making decisions. And then, you know, someone at HR says, actually, you've got to the end of that. Someone else's turn now. What are your thoughts about that? Is it an abuse of people by the organisation? Is it an abuse of a willing horse without, because you've got a story we'll come on to in a minute around actually doing the job can tire you out in terms of opportunities for substantive. But what's your thoughts on, you know, the organisation running with people who are temporary for long periods of time?
I think my personal thought is it should be part of a career path. And you should be looking after individuals as part of a career development program that you would then manage through their PDR and say, this is how we're going to do it. We would have a bank of people that were ready for temporary promotion, perhaps not in particularly where they're working at that particular time. It might be they're going to move over to another area of business to give them the opportunity, expose you in an area where people don't know them as the rank below. They're going in as a superintendent. And you have to hold that rank. You can't just be, I'm a temporary superintendent. I've had it in meetings before where people have been calling me superintendent and then somebody's corrected them as the chair, so well, actually he's temporary. It was almost like, he's not quite there, but you know. So I go against that. I go, if you're a temporary superintendent, you're a superintendent.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. But I do think it needs to be part of a structure. Personal view is that never happened, generally speaking, because organisational need is organisational need. Mm-hmm. So my time as temporary came because there was an organisational need somewhere. Mm-hmm. So when I went into one of the departments, my boss went off very quickly with an unforeseen absence, and they needed someone to run the department, and I was the person available, albeit that I was quite new in the rank of chief inspector. But I knew the business, I knew the projects that were ongoing, and it's something that I could manage and maintain, and that got ratified. So I was in there for quite a while. And then the next time was, you know, I was supporting my line manager, who was obviously a superintendent. I could do the role because I'd done my background and experience. They needed somebody with that type of experience, and I sort of fit the bill for it. And that allowed me to do that. And the final time was when I went as head of learning development as a temporary superintendent, and I got promoted in there. And that was on the basis, probably because I've done quite a lot of work around management and leadership. And there were opportunities to restructure the force training model. Mm. So that lent on my skills, and it was basically put my skills available in there, albeit I didn't have the rank for it.
And while you were doing this work, while you were in the role, i.e. in your mind, substantive, doing all the work that a substantive would do and all the responsibilities that carried, you did get the opportunity to have a board, didn't you, to get the substantive position.
Yeah.
But just tell us a little bit about that from the personal perspective around the fact that, and some of the feedback you got around when I mentioned the word tired. So just explain.
Yeah, no, I mean, to be honest, I said to you earlier, you know, I went through the chief inspectors process, did really well, scored really well, really good feedback. You know, it was just a really positive experience, you know, and I think the key to that was preparing well and having that time to really do it. I was energized, I was up for it, I was really in the zone, if you like. Mm-hmm. When it came to the superintendent's process, of course everybody's telling me, you know, oh, don't worry, you know, it's just get it ratified, you're going to be a superintendent. And at the time I was doing my on-call responsibilities, so I was Ripper. Mm-hmm. Authorized, I was tactical firearms commander, because these are the things that you needed to be as a superintendent anyway, as part of your corporate responsibilities. I was managing a department, and I was managing a change program. Literally, I was running around like a headless chicken, and I was a single parent, and I was knackered, but I just didn't see it at the time. So I drifted into a promotion process, thinking that I can carry on running on empty, and that was a real catalyst for me. It really changed the way I thought, because I bombed in the promotion board to the extent it was like, what on earth just happened? And it was like the complete opposite of what I'd done in the chief inspectors. I had the skills, the experience, masses. At the time, we were competing with inspectors because they were trying to get rid of chief inspectors. So you were competing with inspectors who were being judged on, you know, what their potential was as opposed to what they'd actually done, because they wouldn't have that opportunity to give evidence at a superintendent level. But of course, they were fresh. You know, they were going in there as a process. It was an opportunity to leapfrog a rank, go in there. So the ambition, the drive, all the stuff that I probably had as chief inspector, they had as well, and I didn't. You know, it was a big, big wake-up call for me in terms of how I manage my own life, not just about business. So I came out of that process shell-shocked a little bit. I had some really nice phone calls from members of the command team, because who I've been working with, and they'd seen what I'd done, I guess. But in the day, there were nice, kind words. I got offered some executive coaching to try and get me through the next process. And really, that was the start of me, you know, towards the end of my service. Sounds mad. But that was the call I needed, really, because I sat down and reflected, took time out, and really looked internally and said, you know, what's this all about? What am I doing? Because I'd just been on a conveyor belt of work and promotion. And it was like, is this really important to me? Is this where I'm going? And it really made me think about my values, what's important, what my priorities in life. And I used that time with coaching really well. I mean, I'm very lucky. I worked with some really good coaches, and it was a really good process to go through. It's almost like I could have done with that 5 years earlier, maybe, and gone, right, listen, let's have a think about it. It's all leading up to a promotion process. Have you got time here? You've got 6 months now to your promotion board. Let's have a think about this. Why are you doing this? You know, where's this fit at the moment? Are you ready for it? And then be able to make those decisions beforehand, really, and then go into it all guns blazing or not, as in my case may be.
That's an interesting insight, isn't it? That you wish you'd had that kind of support from the organisation 5 years before you were given it, and also that coaching, that process, that insight or introspection gave you that awareness that actually you were chasing something that wasn't that important to you deep down, and that there were other values that were more important. Is that right?
Yeah, because I've always proud myself on being emotionally aware, good communicator. You know, I'm a sausage negotiator. I've done other things as well. You know, you've got to be able to communicate effectively and have a good self-awareness. And I think that was the thing that bit me more than anything else, is that I wasn't aware of where I was at that time. And it wasn't until subsequently reflecting on it, and I'm a big reflector, I guess, but I'm looking back and going, you know, what was I doing? You know, why was I running around like that?
Do you think you burnt out?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I've seen people burn out, as in significantly burn out, and I don't think it was like that. I think I was running on empty, definitely, both personally and professionally at the time, thinking that I can do everything, because as cops, we always do. We always think we can manage. We always think we can cope. Because generally speaking, we can. So I suppose taking a step back and going, well, actually, no. Saying to my line manager, look, I've got a promotion process coming up. I need to be focused on that. I need a couple of weeks off, or I need to have some time away from that. It's really tough to do that at that level, because the expectation is that a superintendent, certainly and above, is no, the job comes first, and you know, you need to fit that in around everything else. But, and things may well have changed now. It might be more different then. But I think if I was reflecting and going through it again, I would definitely have approached it differently. I would have looked at putting time aside. I would have looked at, do I want this job as well? But I would definitely have put time aside and gone, right, okay, let's think about this. Take a step back and do the coaching process. Get somebody to ask them some really sort of telling questions that makes you think about you as a person and where your priorities are.
Okay, and I'm sure there'll be lots of things here for people to listen into and pick up from your experiences, Darren. And there may well be some differences today, and I think there are some differences today, but there are also many of things that are still the same, i.e. you're still responsible for pursuing your aspirations, you're still responsible for taking action to get there, you're still responsible for, you know, your own energy, drive, enthusiasm, determination to sit through, you know, weeks or months of study for the sergeant's promotion exam, the inspector's promotion exam. And there's a move at the moment that the College of Policing have recently proposed, which is to remove the exam, the legal exam, from certainly from the front end of the process as a gateway into promotion. It hasn't come to fruition yet. It's been knocked a couple of years down the road, but some of the ethos around that, following some consultation, which is not exactly clear who was consulted with, it comes to the point that it's a barrier. It's seen very much as a barrier, and certainly very much for black minority ethnic candidates and other people, as an unnecessary barrier right up front when people say, I'm doing the job as an acting rank, etc. Is there no other way? What are your thoughts around? Because you talked about taking the science exam as a young sergeant. What's that? Nearly 40 years ago, probably.
Yes, okay.
Was
right,
it 40?
Yeah. Right.
Was it 40? Yeah, just under 37 years ago, something like that. Yeah. And yet it's still been there every year for everybody passing. So it's almost like the benchmark standard in policing for legal knowledge for cops who want to move to the next stage, and as you talk about, all the challenges that come after that as a senior manager, should they progress through. And as you say, sometimes that can happen very quickly. What are your thoughts around the removal of the exam as a seismic change in policing? Change being, you know, something that happens all the time.
Okay, it's really interesting because, you know, I've been around long enough to go, is it a good thing to have exams, not exams? My personal experience has been that, you know, depends where the organisation wants to be going forward and what you want to be seen as an organisation. Because if you want to be a professional organisation, if you look at any of the outside industries, people come into them. And if you're going into a particular role, say as a manager, you get assessed as a manager. You know, so as a first line supervisor, second line supervisor, you'll get asked questions around, so people management, finance, equality and diversity. There's a whole range of subjects around it. But also legally, when you go up the ranks as well, it comes with different authority levels. So you do need a test to say, can you do that? Are you available to it? You can't just do stuff when you're on the street or when you're in an office and somebody's coming up to you and saying, right, what about this, what about that? You need to have some basis of knowledge and to be tested. So that's about your own self-confidence and self-worth. That's about knowing that I've been through a real process. Yes, I can do this. It's not just a confidence thing. This is about my credibility. And that's credibility to your peers and to your supervisors, to the people that you work with. It's having that credibility within the organisation and the organisation having credibility that they've got professional people within it. So when you go to court and when you give evidence, or you get asked in the witness box, which I have been. So, you know, I went to coroner's court and I followed a ream of specialists in, and I was working with the fire brigade, and even the fire brigade were coming in with masters of qualifications to show what they were. And the first question the coroner asked was, could you tell me your qualifications and experience in the role that you're in? And up until about probably 2 years earlier, I'd have been going in there and saying I've got 20 odd years of service in the police. I would have been saying that, because internal courses, you can say I'm this and that. But when that looks, and how does that look outside? So for me at the time, fortunately, I was a senior investigating officer, nationally accredited senior investigating officer. I was a member of the Chartered Management Institute. I'd got an MBA. So at least I could go in there and say I wasn't the poor relation in all these people that were leading this massive investigation, whereas everybody else has a load of qualifications. So I think there's that element to your credibility. But the interesting thing is as well is, where do you see yourself as cops? You know, where are you in terms of outside industry? You know, are you a trade? Are you somebody like a painter or decorator? Is it a trade, carpenter, builder, finance manager? You know, where are you? Or are you a doctor? Or are you a lawyer? And we did some work around that when I was in learning development. A lot of people could say, well, we're probably around the lines of a a doctor or a lawyer, you go, really? So they take so many exams to get to where they are. They've got so much experience to get to where they are. And yet we want to talk about, actually, we don't really need an exam. We don't really need this. You know, and for me, I suppose I was very much about professionalizing the service, because I feel when you leave the service, it's nice to leave with something, that's for sure. But it's nice to actually stand amongst your peers outside. And I don't mean peers inside. I mean peers in other agencies that you work with and collaborate with, that they know that you're tested. So when you start talking about business and you're talking about being financially astute, you know, they've got qualifications, you know, and then you're there going, well, I've been on a one day sort of internal course maybe on finance management or whatever, as opposed to is it accredited somewhere? Have you been somewhere or done something? Particularly as a, you know, from a management point of view, as soon as you're doing that management bit, you're getting asked to make some big decisions around how you're managing your resources.
So in terms of degrees and degree entry and all the different routes in there, and whether some degrees should be mandatory within policing or choice, because there are, you know, quite strong arguments on both sides. Where do you come down on that?
I mean, for me, I think it doesn't make sense. So I came through the old system, which was you did 2 years of study, and then at the end of it, you were no longer a probationer. You were confirmed as a constable, and it was a big deal. But if it meant just me doing a little extra work and I've got a degree at the end of it, then I would have done that, because I didn't have a degree. I had about three O-levels, so it would have been quite a big deal, and I've done the work. So if you could find a way of professionalising it and saying, well, look, you've got to do the work anyway, you've got to get developed. If it means you're doing a dissertation at the end of it, or you're doing some work-based stuff, that's all that people do outside industry do, then, and it gives you a qualification which then you can take with you for the rest of your life, then great. You know, I'm all for that. Because having been through an assessment process recently for another part of the voluntary sector, I was tested. I was really tested. And a lot of it was around my management and leadership experience and qualifications.
Well, that's a good place for us then to kind of bring it to a conclusion, really, in that you've been outside policing, and for those that are wondering if there is a life outside retirement, and I know yours has included golfing and building and projects and all the kinds of things you wanted to do, as well as being a dad, as you say, through a period of time. And then all of a sudden you've woken up one morning, had a strong cup of coffee, had a kick, and decided, what, you're going to go through all this again for a new job, a new role that will be quite challenging, that will take you into your 60s. And then you recently kind of went through a full-day assessment process with four short competency-based interviews, a presentation, then a full interview with a panel. I mean, that must have been like preparing again all over for a promotion board. So how did all your previous, you know, experience and preparation for previous assessments go for this? Because clearly you woke up and also had the energy that day as well. So,
well, the first thing is we did say we weren't going to mention the 60s. That's the first thing. No, I think, to be honest, there's definitely life outside. You know, I've seen some, you know, sad cases where people leave and it's like, I've left now, what's left? I never looked at the police like that. The police for me was a chapter. It was 30 years and I was going, and then I was going to do something fresh. And, you know, my police life being police life was that I had, I've got a number of children, and two small children before I left, or one after, one before. And that allowed me to invest some time back in my family, and that was meant the world to me. That was so good. And also to see my older children that I had not seen as much. So it was great to be in that situation to give back a little bit, because my family had always been there to support me. So that's the first thing. It was about appreciating life. I got through 3 years. I had my health, I had my children, and you know, I was very happy at home. So for me, it was an opportunity to take some time out, reflect on where I've been, but also just appreciate where I was at the time. I was able to do some stuff that I just didn't ever have time to do. So to do some practical stuff, to do some building work, to, you know, cliche, take up golf, but golf became such a big deal. I really enjoyed it. It was a chance to be out and...
never mind.
And doing stuff. But then, you know, you can't odds it. You end up drifting back into things that you know about. And I've always felt really strongly about management and leadership, and really interested about it. So I've always... you know, we've always spoken, and I've really enjoyed the journey you've been on with it. And I think for me, a couple of things happened last year where I was given tastes of like going in and helping people out in different industries. And I ended up going back to coroner's court, mm-hmm. 10 years after leaving the place, going back to coroner's court. And it really gave me a buzz again, putting a suit on and started getting my grey matter turning over and saying, well, actually, I'm still young. I still want to do stuff. I think because the joint's so young, you come out and you think, well, no, I need to do something where I feel as though I'm making a difference. And I'm almost going full circle because I joined the police for that reason. And I feel as though I want to do something locally where I can make a difference. And I think doing what I'm doing now really excites me. The thing that I learned from it, though, is that you take all the learning that you've done in the police, it just comes flooding back, all the stuff that's there. And I think it comes back, but you're mature. You've matured a lot. For me, I matured. Mm. I was able to step back a little bit, and the conversations and the selection process was a professional conversation. I always wanted to do that in place. Mm. But you get so worked up about promotion board, you start thinking about the competencies and your questions and how you're going to answer them. And when actually, if you think and prepare properly, it's a professional conversation. You've got all the stuff there. We always talk about, you know, what's... what are your questions for my answers? Mm. Because I've got all the stuff there. Mm. And interestingly, we've spoke about, you know, the competency framework changes. It always changes. It always changes. But the one thing that is universal is your evidence doesn't. Mm-hmm. Your evidence stays the same. You might have to tinker a little bit, or you might have to shape it in a certain way. But your evidence is all there. And the thing that really, really honed in on for me was my values. My values were so important because... firstly, my values are important to me that because they make me make the decisions I do in life generally, professionally and personally. So where I was going into had to align to those values. But it also drove my application. Is this something I really want to do? Or where does it sit in terms of my values? Where am I now right in my time? Have I got the experience? Have I got the skills? What does it mean longer term? And of course, I could put all my previous experience and go, am I going mad? Is this like, I'd like to think it's a midlife crisis, but as you've mentioned our age, I think it might be a bit ambitious. But I think there is something about having a purpose in life and feeling energized by that. And I do think that if you're energized and you've got a purpose, you live longer. And I've got a young family, so I want to live as long as possible.
So, and there will be some young... Thanks so much for that, and thanks for sharing some of those insights. And just to finish, really, there will be people listening into this for various reasons. People who are interested in policing, people who are on the promotion journey that you've alluded to at different stages. Some may well have had knockbacks, but some may be starting out afresh. But wherever they're starting for a process, just for some last thoughts, what tips or guidance or insights would you offer those aspiring individuals to maximise their potential in a process?
I think the first thing is know why you're applying for it. Is it the right thing for you at that particular time? What have you done to develop yourself for that? And it is about personal responsibility. You cannot expect to force anybody else to go, I'm going to give you this and this to promote yourself. So you need to be prepared for it, and you do a long, hard look at yourself or even with a coach or whatever and go, right, I'm ready for this. You do need to know a role inside out. You need to know what the core responsibilities are. You need to know how you fit within those core responsibilities and what evidence you've got to say you can do it or the potential to do it and how you would take it forward in the future. So if you know all that, the application process is key. I literally spent so much time on applications because it really made me think about why I wanted that job and what were my competencies for it, what have I got to give to that job. Because actually, it could go the other way. You go, actually, this isn't for me. This isn't the type of job that I want. It's taking me further away from my life priorities. I'm not quite ready for it yet. I think I need another year or I need this. So you need to be ready for it. You need to be confident. And then you need to prepare fully. You need to take the time out, invest in whatever you need to do to learn. And everybody learns at different stages in different ways. So recognizing how you learn, or when is the best time of day, best time of night, whenever it is, and have a structure and commit. Just commit to it. The one I've worked really well with, I committed fully to it. I researched, I did all my practiced. You know, I practiced giving answers. I practiced talking professionally. I looked at all different ramifications of it. I used for the one I've been on recently. I used the Child Management Institute because it's such a good way. And I'm sure there's lots of other different types of companies. I don't want to endorse one particular one. I'm not. I don't get any recommendations or any bonuses for that. But for me personally, it's just using external resources. Perhaps they're a little bit different to the police because you're going to give a different slant to life. But if you certainly if you're going for management roles, you need to think about your management skills and how you want to up them. And actually, there's lots of ways out there for doing it. So a very long-winded answer to say focus is the key and determination, commitment.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. And I hope that's been helpful for you listening in. I'll bring things to a close now. Thanks, Darren, for giving some time up in your day to do that. Really appreciate it. And I hope you found that useful. And I will be back with another podcast in due course. And until then, take care and stay safe. If you made it this far, thanks for listening and I hope you found that helpful. Let me know your views in the podcast details and Q&A section or by tweeting me or Xing me as it is at @rank_success. If you or a colleague have something interesting to contribute on policing, promotion and or leadership, by all means please get in touch. I'm always happy to share my platform to promote a diverse range of perspectives in policing whilst creating informative content for you. If you like this podcast, please consider becoming a subscriber. Not only will you be helping to ensure I can continue creating free content for everyone, but for just $4.99 a month, you'll also get a load of great stuff on top. This no-hassle, cancel-anytime offer provides extra subscriber-only episodes, priority access to all new episodes, and access to the best of my back catalogue. Should you want to go further and hit the ground running, you'll also receive an exclusive 25% discount on my market-leading structured promotion materials to help focus your effort. If you want in-person support, check out my website for upcoming masterclass dates. I only do a few a year, but they're action-packed with targeted support. You'll leave with great clarity on your force promotion process and with all the tools you need for success. Attendees most often describe the day as inspiring, informative, and motivating. Others have said it cuts through the fear of fog, confusion and nerves, and one went so far as to say it's the best money I ever spent on my own promotion development. Gave me the right frame of mind and motivation to succeed, second to none. So all the best in your career aspirations. You can see a suite of support on my website at ranksuccess.co.uk, plus my popular free blogs at policepromotion.blog. Until next time, take care and stay safe.